got in, and there in the hollow stare, a passerby would surely have seen the anguish, the desperation, the hopelessness. But if anyone saw, nobody understood. Or at least nobody cared enough to stop Wally and ask him what was the matter. The elevator rose and the door opened. Wally clutched a briefcase under one arm, fumbled for his room key. Moments later, he was sitting in a chair in the solitude of his room. Amid the torrent of confused thoughts and emotions rushing through Wally's brain, a grim realization. He had worked all of his life for nothing. And this was what haunted him. He had worked all of his life for nothing. Growing up, he'd been taught that one was rewarded in direct proportion to one's efforts, that accomplishment was simply a matter of working a little harder than the next fellow. But the real world does not always comply with the platitudes. Wally had since learned that success sometimes comes by accident, and that it's possible to devote oneself completely to an objective only to discover at the end of the road that he has utterly wasted his time. And for Wally, this was the end of the road. He had tried his best, and his best had not been good enough. All that remained was the way out. Anxious hours passed. It was evening before Wally finally opened his briefcase and removed the vial of potassium cyanide. An experienced chemist, Wally knew that his toxic chemical could be made even more toxic when combined with an acid, so Wally had brought a lemon, the juice from which he now squeezed into a glass. It would be over in moments. Immediate unconsciousness, convulsions, and death. Wally was not afraid now. Even the despair was gone. For the first time in a long time, he knew peace. That evening, the hotel manager found Wally in his room lying dead on the floor. Police were summoned. Family and friends were notified. Many who had known sensitive Wally Carruthers were not much surprised because he had battled depression most of his life. Also, a year and 3 months prior, Wally's beloved sister had passed away. The loss had weighed heavily on him. And then, of course, there was that obsession that his life's work was all for nothing. He truly, deeply believed himself a failure at 41. Yet what Wally Carruthers saw as the bitter end, in fact, was the darkness before the dawn of what might have been his brightest tomorrow. For not 3 weeks before his lonesome death in a Philadelphia hotel room, Wally had applied for a patent, and that patent, number 2130948, was awarded him posthumously. Wallace Hume Carruthers had unknowingly created a world that he would never see. Myopic from self-doubt and despondency, he perceived himself and his work as worthless, never bothering to hope, never imagining that one day, less than 3 years away, his patent would be deemed historic, nor that he, who thought he was finished at 41, and who thought his life had never accomplished anything, was to be hailed as the father of nylon. Now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast designed to help you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to better protect. It's been one of those days, folks. Services to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Joel Peterson. He's the CEO of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. We're going to talk about the growth and importance of economics of the North County wine industry, changing tastes and demographics, plus basin water challenges, and how the wine industry here is faring with those various different trends in our area. And then I really think the Paso Robles Wine Alliance does a really great job of promoting the wine industry. I spent a lot of time on your website, Joel. So welcome to Protecting What Matters.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So Joel, tell us a little bit. I mean, I know you're a local guy,
yeah,
pretty much. You've been here a while, but tell us a little about yourself and how you came to be the CEO of the Wine Alliance.
Yeah, thanks. Good question. So I moved here full-time in 2001. My grandmother was Virginia Peterson, and my grandfather was Alan Peterson. They lived in this area since the 1940s. My grandma has a school named after her, named Virginia Peterson Elementary mm-hmm. School, and she was an educator. My dad was born and raised in Paso. He graduated in class of 61, Pat Bearcat. Moved back here because I wanted to get in the wine industry. And at that point, it was kind of a budding industry. I had been living in Los Angeles before that, and I wanted to come back and see how this wine thing was going to work out. And so we made the move, started working at some local wineries. I worked at Austin Hope. I worked at Eberly. Worked for La Ventura Winery, and just really fell in love with the area and wine. And after about 7 or 8 years of helping Austin Hope kind of grow that brand and launching some brands, I went over to a little boutique PR agency called Soil Terra Strategies and worked with another few brands, which I really liked. I went over and had a 2-year affair with craft beer. I was the marketing manager at Firestone Walker Brewing Company, okay, doing craft beer for a couple of years. And then this position came up open in 2019, and I've been here for 7 years. So it's been a fun ride, you know, got through COVID and here we are, you know, now in kind of a softening market of wine and trying to figure out what this new wine drinker wants to drink.
So why don't you describe me? I mean, I've been here almost 30 years now. So yeah. I remember, I mean, I've seen, you know, I mean, most of the guys that I started drinking wine with have all retired and sold off or something like that. So, I mean, yeah. how have things evolved over the last 20 or 30 years here? I mean, there's been a lot of consolidation in the industry.
Absolutely. It's definitely changed. As you know, I mean, you've been from around here. So many of the wineries that started here were started in the 80s and early 90s. And so you mm-hmm. had, you know, it's people who, you know, had either come here early on in their life or midlife, started wineries. And it's a lot of work, as you know. You plant a vineyard, and that takes 3 or 4 years to get fruit. And you throw it in a barrel, that takes a couple of years to get that into product. So you're 5 years in before you're even, you know, selling wine, and then you're probably another few years before you're making a profit. So that certainly is a lot of the wineries that are here in Paso Robles. Then you saw a lot of consolidation. Some money really came into here in the early 2000s with brands, you know, kind of getting some backing. And then in the last decade, you've really seen people like, you know, the Wonderful Company come in. Constellation, Gallo, WX brand. So you've really seen this, kind of some of the bigger national players come in and really discover Paso. So the cool thing is we still have those small guys, right? We still have the small, 80% of the wineries in our association make less than 5,000 cases. So mm-hmm. you really have like kind of this group of people who make a small amount of wine. But on a national level, you've got the, you know, these people who understand, you know, the power of how great the quality is in Paso Robles at way less of the cost than it was in Napa or Sonoma.
So, right. Well, I think candidly, I think the wine is better here.
Yeah,
it's
way more approachable for sure.
Right. Yeah. And well, yeah. And I think to me, I mean, I hate to say this, whenever I go up to Napa, it tastes watery to me. It doesn't mm-hmm. seem to have the same
power. Yeah.
Yeah. The stuff that we've got going on here.
Yeah. No, we've just made great wines. And so you've seen some changes certainly in that. And we've tried to ride that storm. We've got really innovative people here in town who've, you know, kind of figured out what's, you know, let's make it about the experience. Mm-hmm. And certainly during COVID, that helped us when you could taste wines and go on vineyard tours and go through cellars and taste indoors and things like that. So, and then you've got people who've put in other things besides the wine tasting. You want to go take a vineyard tour. You want to go on a zip lining tour. You want to do archery. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to pair food with your wine. So if you got to make it different, that's really helped make it fun as well. And I think what's really helped Paso Robles is honestly, we're a road trip destination. We're 3 hours from LA. We're 3 hours yeah. from San Francisco, a couple hours from Fresno and Bakersfield. So people want to get out of their house and really like get away from the rat race a little bit. And what a great respite than there is in Paso Robles, right?
Well, and the rest of us locals just hide on the
exactly,
weekends, right?
Yeah. Right.
So,
right.
I mean, so I'm looking yeah. at some statistics here. So there's like about 200 to 250 wineries.
Yep.
And about 40,000 acres of vineyard.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so with this kind of like downturn in the market, I mean, what are the coping mechanisms that that the wineries are doing to, you know, keep things going?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think the one thing they've had to do really is figure out how much wine they're going to make, because obviously, you know, it's all of it's a business, right? It's supply and demand. And so some of the wineries have actually had to kind of curtail or just level off what they were making instead of growing, you know, 2 to 5% every year. They've brought that down. The other thing they've done is they've really figured out if they're going to make, is wine club going to be their number one driver? Because usually the way it's worked for my folks and some older generations is you join your favorite 3, 5, 6 wine clubs, and then they ship you wine 3 times a year or twice a year. And I think this new younger drinker who's, you know, in their 20s or 30s wants to come and have an experience, buy some bottles and leave. They don't want to join a club, so they're having to rethink how that works. And so they're really trying to get people to stay there for a little bit longer and then sell them bottles and just have more of that come through. So I think the clubs are evolving a little bit, or they're starting new clubs where it's like, hey, it's more of a subscription. We're going to charge you X number of bucks a month and you're going to get some wine, but you can turn it off whenever you want to. So things like that are really, you see wineries kind of get creative in terms of not going with that tried and true model of the wine club experience, but make it about the experience in the tasting room. Has really been, I've seen some changes there in
the space. Yeah, I mean, I was reading, I think it was Vina Robles has a club for one bottle a month or something.
Exactly. They charge you X number of dollars per month, and you got that bottle, and you can turn it off if you want to. So that's what a lot of these, you know, as you know, we've kind of gone to the subscription model, whether it's Netflix or you know, everything's a subscription. They can ship you food to your house or wine to your house. But so that's really been a part of it. And then I think also just getting really creative in the direct-to-consumer business. There was a big shift in California where RNDC, which is the second biggest distributor in the state, closed down a few months ago. Literally just hundreds of wineries looking for now a new kind of go-to-market strategy.
Really?
And so that's a huge, that's a huge speed bump for a lot of the wineries. And then do you go direct? Do you still have those relationships with the retailers or with the restaurateurs? And then do you, that means that hiring a salesperson, they then go work the market for you. So
right.
Sometimes it's really hiring that extra person who can go and open new sales channels for you.
Well, so as an old timer, what I find really kind of weird when I do go out tasting now, because I mean, my problem, when I first built a wine cellar, I had to fill it up. So I joined like 20 different wine clubs and I fill it up that way. Now it's like I got, as one of the old buddies retires out of, I say, this is time to get out of this wine club because I've got so many bottles of wine.
Yeah,
but I guess one of the big changes is, I'm taken aback by what the wineries charge for a tasting these days.
Yeah, it's been kind of, it's an interesting thing where they've had to kind of ratchet up their tasting fees to kind of make that as a revenue center. But I think the interesting thing is those fees have actually leveled off or gone down in the last year because I think of the softening of the market. So there's still people who are doing fine and they're charging, whether it be $20 a person or $40 bucks a person. But there are some folks who've dropped it down. And I mean, you look at, someone like Gary Everly, who's been here, years and years, and Gary still, he's like, I'm not going to charge tastings forever.
Yeah.
But just, at the end of the day, as minimum wage here is, $16, $17. You got to pay people, they're opening bottles, they're cleaning tables, they're professionals. So you've got to find a way to actually like have some revenue from pouring wine for people. Now you don't want it to be your revenue, so you want to be shipping boxes and carrying boxes out to their cars. But at the end of the day, it is a labor intensive thing of opening wines and pouring for people. So.
It seems to me another coping mechanism that some of the wineries have done is they've built VRBOs or they inns on their property.
Yeah, you see it definitely. You see a different revenue center, right? They can. They can have an inn, or they can have an experience, a tour, and things like they can do a food pairing. So they've kind of gotten creative, because that's the one thing that is unique is this new person who's coming to Paso. They want something different. They just don't want to sit deli up to the bar anymore. They want to really see what else is out.
Right.
So it's a diverse experience, which is nice.
How have all the wineries downtown and in Tin City changed the dynamic?
They've changed it. Well, it's been, to me, it's been pretty drastic. So we our offices are downtown, and right now there's over 25 downtown tasting rooms. There's over 25 tasting rooms in Tin City. So you just have simply more folks who can walk around and try those wines. Mm-hmm. And I think that's affected maybe some of the traffic out in some of the beautiful vineyards we have in the east side or the west side. They can go out, instead of driving out there, they can hit 3 or 4 or 5 wineries in one way. So It's affected it. I wouldn't say positively or negatively. It's just definitely changed the way that Paso is seen, because now you can park downtown and walk and taste for a half day or for a full day and keep going. So.
And one of the things that I noticed about your website is that, you've really drawn together all the various aspects of the tourism industry here.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, so why don't you, so everybody's working together here to bring tourists and
Absolutely. Yeah. So we work with our sister organization. They're called Travel Paso, and they're a great organization. And so they operate from some of the funds, basically from the transient occupancy tax, the TOT tax. So when someone stays at an Airbnb or stays at a hotel or vacation rental, a portion of those funds go to fund our tourism, our organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work with them and making sure we have similar messaging and drawing people here. Ours is really focused about wine tourism.
Right.
And we really work to make sure that people on our website, it could be restaurants, it could be hoteliers, it could be, you know, wine bars. And so if you're a winery, that you can be part of the association. We're kind of, our backbone is the wine is the mm-hmm. wineries. But we have other different associate levels of membership. You know, we've got growers, associates, and then hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you put it all together, essentially it's 500 people in our association, even though 200 are wineries, 500 businesses total working together mm-hmm. to drive that kind of tourism or ecosystem we have.
Now, I know you're housed with the Paso Chamber. Yeah. I mean, how do you guys all work together in that?
Well, we meet, you know, pretty regularly. There's a group that meets quarterly between Travel Paso, the Chamber, and ourselves and the city of Paso Robles, making sure that we're you know, aligned on marketing and going to the right cities together to kind of having similar story to tell. It's from a dollars and cents, it's just great to have the efficiency of, we share a conference room, we share a kitchen, we no longer have to have, you know, those buildings, those spaces that only get used once a month. And the nice thing is we kind of just have that shared efficiency of an office space together.
It looks like you share some employees too.
No, I don't. We don't. We work together, but we don't share employees at
All
this
right.
point. But
there is a separation
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
okay.
there's a separation. But you know, it made sense when we started working together, and we meet. Like I said, we meet quarterly, talk a lot about who's coming to Paso Robles, what events are happening when, mm-hmm. and then the space came open, and at that point, the CEO, which Gina Fitzpatrick, she came to me and said, "Hey, why don't we get this together?" We mm-hmm. started talking. Our boards liked the idea. We started looking at dollars and cents. And you're like, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
so it's
good.
Great. Yeah,
good. Let me go back to the coping mechanisms for a minute. I mean, you know. So the other things that I noticed is that, and again, I'm with some of the stuff that's going on here, I'm a little more distracted than usual today, but I've noticed that a lot of the wineries are shifting to spirits and beers. Beer. I mean, I remember when Randy Phillips out at Red Souls bought his still, and how much fun that was. But I mean, you know, is that working out for the
I think it
folks?
Is. I still think it's a pretty small amount. I mean, we've got, you know, call it 200 wineries in our association and call it 250 in the region. But you really start talking about less than 15 distilleries, and so mm-hmm. I'd say some have done it, and certainly you know, there's some great partners in our region with Calco's Beer and Barrel House Brewing and Firestone mm-hmm. Walker. But I, you know, 10 or 15 wineries who've added a still has been nice, because that way they have a different experience to offer someone. And so if someone doesn't love wine, or they want to, they love wine but they also love spirits, they can go in there and do a tasting of, you know, vodkas or brandies mm-hmm. or distilled spirits. So it's been nice, because it just adds that diversity of experience. It isn't, you know, a thing where we've got, I think we're going to have 200 distilleries here anytime soon, but certainly to add, you know, that 15 or 20 is nice. And it rounds out for us, because, you know, we struggled to, you know, we have to do the Paso Wine Fest. We've done it mm-hmm. for 40 years. And we went to the board a couple of years ago, and we're like, you know, I think we'd probably grow our ticket sales if we added a few Paso, like, local distillers that mm-hmm. we have. And that's been a nice addition. We've added a few, you know, breweries. The focus is still on wine, but at the end of the day, if you get together with a half dozen of your friends, there's going to be probably one person who's like, I don't like wine. I want to go have a distilled spirit. So we want to make sure that they feel part of the party as well, and they can come there. So yeah, it's been nice. It's been definitely been an addition to the region.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, the demographic of what the industry is dealing with are the younger people. You know, they're not going to spend 30 or 40 or 50 bucks for a bottle.
Yeah,
and they're
not yet
because and they want a cocktail.
Yeah,
or they're not drinking.
They're drinking RTDs, which stands for ready to drink. So they're doing the pre-made cocktails is really huge. If you walk into, you know, any liquor store or a grocery store, you're going to see RTDs. Those are the pre-made, you know, drinks, or the seltzers. You know, so you've got Truly, you've got White Claw, and in some ways those, you know, those are nice, because maybe they're a gateway, or they're kind of introducing people how to, like, mm-hmm. have a light spritz. And then there's some really nice wine cocktails being made. There's a couple of local producers making a wine cocktail, but you ultimately, you know, wine is something that's been around for, you know, thousands mm-hmm. and thousands of years. There's story behind it, there's history, mm-hmm. there's culture. So I think it's one of those things where if you get people a really good wine experience with the right people telling that story and really talking about how it's made, you really can make people fall in love with it. It's really a special drink. So
yeah.
It's I think we sometimes we're a little bit too hard, I think, on the this younger generation sometimes. But I look back in my 20s, I mean, you kind of drink, you know, you're looking, you're value conscious, so you know a beer is way cheaper than sometimes a glass of wine, and so you're looking at kind of where you're going to spend your dollars,
right,
and what people are doing. But I really have faith in the wine industry that we're going to come around and come out of this stronger. I think it's having us sharpen our pencil a little bit and really be smart about how we spend our dollars and who's coming to Paso Robles.
All right. Well, welcome to Protecting What Matters. What's your question?
Hi, Joel. You know, Toby was the smartest one. He built his wine club up so much that all of it's shipped and it's all charged on a revolving credit card. And he's got 30,000 members, and I'll bet you he hasn't lost 10% of them during this glut.
Do you have a question? Because we're going into a break here.
Stop
talking for a minute, Dale. We're going into the break, so ask your question really quickly, and then we'll answer on the other side of the break.
I just want to say that the wine industry has brought the tourism here, and we're proud of them.
All right. Thanks
Dale.
Thanks for calling, Dale.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Anyway, we should be hearing some bumper music at this point, but I'm not hearing it. Okay, well, we'll just keep talking until we do, or we'll just we'll talk over everything. So obviously, the wine industry is kind of in the middle of this whole water stuff. So
yeah.
And we'll talk a little bit about that before the break, and then maybe take up after. But I mean, I guess part of the issue is, I mean, I heard the state is dramatically over planted with grapes. It was something like, I mean, thousands of acres.
It's quite a bit. We've pulled out of the statewide about 50,000 acres over the last 3 years.
Wow.
It's quite a bit. If you think about that, if you think of Paso having 40,000 acres and the state has ripped out 50,000 over the last 3 years, it's like the equivalent of that. Now, part of that is one of those supply and demand things. So, you know, you had a lot of vineyards that are getting pulled out are in the Central Valley.
Okay.
So we can talk about it when the rain comes
back. Let's talk about that, and then we'll talk a little bit about the fallowing program, and then we'll move on to other more interesting things. So,
sounds good.
Folks, stand by. We'll be right back.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. President Trump swearing in the newest member of his cabinet this afternoon. Mark Wayne Mullen is the new director of Homeland Security.
It's humbling, and I never take it for granted, but I've made this very clear that I don't care what color your state is. I don't care if you're red or you're blue. At the end of the day, my job is to be Secretary of Homeland and to protect everybody the same. And we will do that.
All in confirmed by the Senate last night in a 54-45 vote. Passengers expressing frustration due to long, winding security lines at several airports.
It has been crazy.
Probably not going to make it.
This isn't working for us right now.
Now, the partial government shutdown is to blame. Lawmakers have not fully funded Homeland Security. That means TSA agents are not getting a paycheck, and many are calling out in protests. America is listening to Fox News.
Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers welcomes Heather Bourdain to its team of commercial property casualty professionals. With more than 20 years of experience, Heather can design insurance solutions that protect your business. Whether you're a contractor, winery owner, farmer, rancher, or manufacturer, Heather is the right person to survey your needs and develop innovative solutions to protect your most important asset. Contact Heather today, 805-540-3900, or Heather at AdlerBelmontGroup.com.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Joel Peterson, CEO of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. Call in or text with questions, 805 238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Joel, we started talking a little bit about the fallowing program. Why don't you unpack that from the perspective? Well, first of all, I mean, are the North County wineries, let's just focus on the North County here, are they pulling some grapes out, the vines out at this point?
Yeah, that's a good question. So they're not pulling them out, pulling out a lot of vineyards here in Paso. We are mm-hmm. still one of the regions that's really doing pretty well from a standpoint of people coming here and buying wines. It's not as drastic it is in, say, in some of the areas like Fresno and Lodi, where mm-hmm. they really, unfortunately, I mean, there's reports that maybe like a third to half of their crop wasn't even picked last year. Mm-hmm. Because some of the bigger buyers aren't going and buying that fruit. So there are, we think the estimate here in our region of wines that have acres of vines that have been pulled out is about 3,000 to 4,000 acres. So pretty small.
Not even 10%.
Not even 10%.
Right.
And some of those are because at a certain point you need to pull acres out because the vineyards are old, right? And sometimes
right.
you're like, you know, the vineyard, 20-25 years is a pretty good length. Zinfandel can last longer, so can Petite Syrah, but these Cabernet vineyards, after 25 years, you know, there's some disease in there. They're older vines. You can really tear those out. So it really allows them to think about if they want to wait a couple of years before they mm-hmm. replant those vineyards. And obviously, at the end of the day, there is a water challenge in California that there always has been, and it's a matter of really managing it. And so that's what the fallowing program is about.
Mm-hmm.
Is how can we best manage the water situation here in Paso Robles?
So what the fallowing program does, I mean, so again, before the fallowing program, basically the grape guys were almost forced to irrigate. Because otherwise, then they'd lose their access to the water
basically
somehow.
You had to keep, you had to keep watering your vineyard. Because if you didn't, then they basically said you stopped watering your vineyard. You can't do that. So the fallowing program is a voluntary program.
Right.
It basically allows you to, you know, temporarily take the land out of irrigation to conserve water, which is mm-hmm. what we need to do. And then part of it, it's part of a broader effort to really bring the basin back into long term sustainability under the state law, which is SGMA.
Right.
So we basically, you know, there's several basins that are around the state that are in overdraft,
mm-hmm.
and you have to basically create a plan called SGMA. And so our county's had its challenges, you know, over the years trying to figure out whether, is there a water, district, is there not a water district? But at the end of the day, I mean, the good news out of all this is that essentially there's going to be less acres to farm.
Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your comment or question for Joel?
Good afternoon.
Oh,
well,
hi, Cody.
I have a comment and a question.
Go for it, Cody.
Yeah. Well, the bottom line is I go to a lot of water meetings. I basically carry Greg Graywall's briefcase around. Somebody has to. The bottom line is this. I've been to a number of meetings about water at the Board of Supervisors, and there's somebody by the name of Patricia Wilmore that represents herself as being an administrative advocate for One Country Alliance. And every time that this woman gets up and testifies, she testifies in behalf of the very people that are trying to steal domestic water. I've lived here all my life. We've been here since 1947. So we have a little experience. And the bottom line is, I am definitely seeking quiet title, just in case anybody needs to know that, because nobody can trust anybody now because of the wine industry. They would be happy to steal my water if it meant that they could grow another grape. And that's how most of us are feeling out here, and we represent quite a few people. So, you know, we hear all the warm and fuzzy stuff and about this vineyard and that vineyard. Why do we have to put up with Airbnbs? Why do we have to put up with sit-down dinners for up to 50 people? Why do we have to do that out here in the woods where we have chosen to live and are willing to put up with all of the normal inconveniences for living in the country?
Well, I think, you know, at some level, Cody, and I want Joel to answer that question, but at some level, I mean, again, we've talked about this before. I mean, there's definitely a tension, so to speak, between old-timers like us who came here to be to live in a nice, quiet place, and now tourism and bigger businesses are.
You know how many times I've watched tourism come and go.
Well, yeah. Well, anyway, let's let Joel answer the question because he's our guest.
No, I mean it's fair enough. Part of it comes down to, I think, your land and property rights in terms of if you buy a piece of property or you have land, and you know what you're allowed to do on it is up to sometimes what the government says. And so is that a good thing or a bad thing? And some counties and some, you know, local jurisdictions have said we're going to really limit this and have less of that. And some have said we're going to have more. And I think our county, you know, looks at everything and tries to find that common ground where you can have some things and not other things. Certainly if you go and try to do weddings, you're really restricted. And hey, we can only do X number of weddings per year and you can't have more than 100 people. So there are some
I have a wedding venue right around the corner from me, a country wedding venue. And I'm sure they hold at least that number of weddings. I get it. I don't mind vineyards. I don't mind making wine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind wine tasting. All that's okay. But we've gone way beyond that now. So, and now the industry is going to have a little bit of a burp, and a number of people are going to go away because they thought they were going to make a living making wine, and the old people, the old stock is still doing so. But all these vineyards that we're planting, we have a water problem. According to some, it's a water shortage. We know better because we've studied it now. But still, the wine industry wants to control our domestic water. Why? That's my question.
All right. Cody, thanks for your call. All right.
Bye for now.
Take care. Would you like to respond at all to this?
I mean, we have a government affairs person, like you said, Patricia Wilmore. We advocate on behalf of our members. We are good partners to our community, and we're good partners. I don't think people are trying to steal water here in Paso Robles.
Right. So how, where do you see this going? I mean, oh, we got another caller. See, Cody started something. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question?
Hi, yes. You know, I agree a lot of what Cody says. I think the grape industry probably, just prior to 2010, was about as big as it needed to be, just for as far as the water issue goes. Now, I don't have scientific knowledge, but I really think you should get a hydrologist on there or one of the local well drillers. You know, I'm a senior on somewhat of a fixed income, I guess. I guess everybody's on a fixed income. But I had to spend nearly $70,000 last year to drill a new well. And at nighttime in the summer, about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, the big pumps in the vineyards start, and they sound like jet engines. And they go on, they hum on, and then they hum off. And I know they're pumping thousands upon thousands upon thousands, 10,000s of gallons of water. My old well, when I first got my property here in 1988, that thing could turn it on and it would pump. It would never stop pumping. When I got the new well, it would turn on for about 3 minutes, and then there wasn't enough water. So I got the fun of spending, like I said, it actually probably just a little over $70,000 this past year on a new well. So don't get me wrong, I like the wine industry. I like the restaurants, the hotels. I don't mind some of the tourism, but I think we went overboard, and I think Cody's right about trying to control this water, and we've got to restrict the winery's water, the grape water. They need to grow it more the old style, the natural style. And if hopefully this will fix itself, because there's declining consumptions. There's all kinds of studies on that, and it's happening. They're saying restaurants are closing because people aren't drinking it, getting drinks in the bars. So maybe this will take care of itself because of declining consumption. But we do have a problem.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate your your concerns. Yeah, it's a contentious issue in this county.
Yeah, in our area, unfortunately. It's been there for a while. I think the nice thing is that as the growers have been here for a while and have been dealing with this, you know, you can grow really good grapes and really good vines with a lot of water, and so you're seeing water consumption down. And I think the challenge is, you know, the some of the wineries, the new vineyards wells are deeper, and you've got some new technologies, and so, you know, that's also part of the problem is they've gone a little deeper, but pretty efficient.
This is a popular topic, Joel. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. Really, what's your question or comment? Quickly, because we need to move on.
Just
we need to move on a bit.
About water and dry farming.
Okay.
I understand that, for instance, Peachy Canyon is doing a lot of dry farming of their grapes, and I'm just wondering why more people can't do that. And maybe you could explain that on the air, and God bless the Beckett family, too.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Becca's a great, great family. The Becca's, they helped, you know, founded Peachy Canyon and been here for years and years and years. You can do dry farm with a lot of grapes, and certainly, you know, Zinfandel, which was kind of our heritage grape here, Petite Syrah. You really have to start the vineyard almost with a dry farming. So you've got to start it kind of almost baby feed it a little bit of water, but they got to get the roots really deep. Excuse me. And I think you're starting to see more and more, certainly on the western hills of Paso Robles, Tablas Creek, Lone Madrone, Peachy Canyon. There's some other ones who really are using like little to no water, and I think you'll probably see more and more of that. I think the vineyard farmers are really good. The vineyard managers have gotten really, really good about using as least amount of water as possible as we have this challenge, and I think we're going to continue to do that. You can make really good wine using not a lot of water, so I think you're going to continue to see that evolution.
So changing topics, I mean, you know, this, you know, the wine industry brings a lot of tourism, and of course, you know, we hear, well, you know, tourist dollars help pay for all of the services, you know. Now, again, I mean, we know we might have a slow cog tax increase. We'll be talking to John Pichong about that next week.
Okay.
But I mean, again, how can I say this, our roads are terrible up here, and I mean, when does this all become a problem for tourists?
I think we've seen that play out over the last few decades. I mean, the city's working on those roads, and they're getting better, hopefully, every year. But there's also wear and tear on them as well. So we do know, you know, it's almost like a chicken and the egg thing. I mean, we have a lot of tourists who come here right now, and they help us. You know, about almost a third of our tax revenue from the city comes from the tourists, because spending, you know, dollars in the gas stations and the hotels and in the restaurants and things like that. So that's helped us kind of get where we are in terms of like making sure we've got public services, fire, police, roads, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, you know, it's allowed us to have a pretty awesome life here in Paso Robles in terms of where we live. Is it perfect? No. But if you drive around a lot of places in America right now, I think we're pretty well off in terms of what we have. So it's just a matter of like sometimes you got to look around and see what we have here in Paso in terms of those things. So I mean, certainly there's always going to be criticism of those things, but at the end of the day, you've got to be careful. If we didn't have them, what would be here? I mean, I think everyone can remember, all the old timers, they can remember what Paso looked like in 1975 in downtown. There wasn't a lot of things around the downtown park, and it's certainly wine and wine tourism helps, I think, save a lot of what we have in downtown Paso Robles. So
I want to make sure we spend some time here. We've got the wine festival coming up in the middle of May, right?
Yeah, May 15th and 16th this year.
And I mean, this is a pretty, I have to say, it's a pretty impressive program that you guys have put on. Would you like to unpack some of these events?
Yeah.
They're not, and I will say, it's not inexpensive.
No, it's not. We did have a local package, so it was $99, and we sold a ton of those. I mean, we really do try and support the locals in terms of that. We all remember when it was down in the park, and it was great, and it was, you know, $20 to go to it. But at the end of the day, it's expensive to put these events on as well.
So yeah. That's
kind of part of it. You know, we look at it as how much would you spend if you were going to drive around and hit, you know, five or six wineries, get food, get drink, get live music. I mean, you're going to spend a little bit of money anyway. So, but it's really a great event. Well, on Friday night, it's called Paired Paso. We've got 12 wineries. They each bring one wine, and they pair that they come in with a chef. That chef makes a special bite, a special dish that they pair with that wine, and the folks can come in and try all 12 of those bites, and then they're kind of like a little mini entree with those 12 wines. There's basically a competition level. There's a judge's choice winner and a People's Choice winner. That's Paired Paso on Friday night in the event center. And on Saturdays, our Grand Tasting, which is our kind of annual, you know, been happening for 40 years. We have 125 wineries. We've got big brands, small brands, medium brands, this, you know, a little VIP area, some live music. We've got just really just everything about wine country in that little, you know, area of our event center. You know, if you know the event center where Mid-State Fair, you know, where the Mid-State Fair happens, there's activations so brands can come in there and really have really fun things where they're pairing food with, you know, with wine, or they're pairing their food with music, or there's different things they can experience telling their brand story. And then on Sunday, we finish it off with a sparkling Paso out at Paris Valley Road Winery. We've got, I think, 12 or 14 wineries who all make sparkling now. Sparkling's really taken off in the wine world. And so we've kind of become this hub for sparkling wine. Certainly, Rob has helped along with that. And Paris Valley Road makes great wines as well. So there's all those wines. And so that you go there and you have all these different foods paired with the 12 different sparkling wines as well. So it's a full weekend. You can buy a ticket that gets you to all three events. You can go to just one of them if you would like to, but... So signature event, you can really
get probably lose your liver after you do all three events, right?
Well, of course, you know, if you wanted to, you could get the spit cup and be spitting as well. So
what fun is that? Come on.
I know, right?
Well, I love your FAQ. Can I bring my baby? Can I bring my dog? It's you know, again, it looks like a really terrific series of events here. And I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, getting back to the whole thing, I mean, do locals attend this?
Yeah,
I mean, you get a lot of locals.
A third of our ticket sales go to locals, which is pretty cool. In the county, I should say. So the third within the county, I'd say probably, you know, we sold over 300 locals tickets.
Okay.
And so, you know, and then I would bet there's people who just didn't get the locals ticket, but were still locals. So you're probably talking about, you know, a quarter of our tickets are probably sold to people who love Paso Robles, live in Paso Robles and want to experience it. You know, it's kind of a big party atmosphere. You run into old friends, you see old winemakers you haven't seen in a long time. You're trying new foods. Mm-hmm. The restaurants are coming in and showcasing some of their new foods that they're making.
Yeah.
So it's just a way to celebrate, you know, we thank the wineries for doing it, because at the end of the day, the wineries want to be, you know, in their tasting room selling wine and gaining those customers. But it's the one time a year we get all of our wineries together in one area to say, what's the best of Paso? And let's throw a big party for everyone and kind of showcase what we're doing.
So, all right. So, so tickets are on sale now.
Tickets on sale now. Yep. They're on pasowine.com and they're available. They were at $99 for locals. That pass has passed, but certainly tickets now are $165. And then any winery who's pouring has a promo code that'll knock a few bucks off that as well. So it gets it down to like closer to $155. So
and you know, again, I mean, I think that you know, again, I've stopped going to the wineries because you know, to me, one of the features of going to the wineries was that I got to know the owners.
Yeah.
Now you don't really, but now, you know, they're all old like me.
Well, no, I mean, if you go to there's a lot of places the wineries, owners are still there.
Are
you
they
go to
still,
Tin City, and especially like, you know, some of these smaller wineries, you walk in and you see the, you know, the owner, the winemakers behind the bar pouring, especially if you swing by there on a Thursday or Friday.
Okay.
You're definitely going to see some owners and some winemakers. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. But the other thing that I liked about, and I want to make sure I get this in before we go to break here, was you have a really great app. Talk a little bit about what people can learn on the app.
Yeah, we developed an app a few years ago. It's called the Paso Wine App. It's free. It's on Apple or Google, and then you go on there and download it. And it's basically kind of a simplified version of our website. And so what we found is people really want to just, if they're here for the weekend, you go on there, it has all the events that are happening that weekend. It has a map. It has a map location and direction to every winery in Paso Robles. And has all the information about what they're pouring as well. So it's just really a simplified version of the website, because sometimes on your phone, the website can be a little clunky and, you know, a little bit hard to manage because there's so much information. We just really give you on the app what you need, and if you're here for the weekend, which is a map and where, how to get there, what they're pouring and what events are happening. So it's really kind of like at your fingertips.
Yeah, no, it's really got a lot of functionality.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, they're not cheap to put together.
No,
but we really try and make it easier for the consumer, because, you know, we, at the end of the day, you know, we're friendly with all of our competitors, like, you know, regions like Santa Barbara or Monterey or Napa or Sonoma, but we're also trying to get them to come to Paso Robles to support us as well.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
And then finally, we're going to go to break here in about 25 seconds. Talk a little bit about your podcast.
Yeah, it's called Where Wine Takes You. It's hosted by Adam Montiel. A really fun podcast. We have it on every week. It comes out, and we have a couple guests on there talking about, you know, what makes their brand story, and it really it's a great way to tell the story is through a podcast these days.
And how long you guys been doing that now?
We started it just about a year after, but right into COVID. So we've been doing it for 3.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. Great. 163 episodes.
All right.
Yeah.
Is there anything I've forgotten to ask you? Because I'm going to ask you one more question on the other side of the break.
No, this is good. Yeah, we're good. I think you've asked me all kinds of, I mean, we have the podcast, we do a blog, we do a website, we have a website. We do the Paso Wine map. We print 100,000 of those every year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. Folks, we'll be back again in about 3 minutes, and we'll wrap up with Joel's predictions on what we're going to be looking like 10 or 20 years from now. So I may not be around, but I'd like to know. All right.
Great.
Stand by, folks.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Elizabeth McDonald, and this is the Fox Business Report.
A choppy trading session with the major averages losing steam in the final half hour of trading and finishing lower as Middle East tensions, higher oil prices, and inflation jitters are weighing on investors. West Texas Intermediate crude, the U.S. oil benchmark, rose to around $92 a barrel. Tech was the worst performer among the S&P 500 sectors, while energy and industrials gained. The magnificent big cap tech stocks were mostly lower across the board, led by Microsoft and Alphabet. Software stocks fell and weighed on the tech-heavy NASDAQ, which could signal that investors are continuing to worry about how artificial intelligence could upend the industry. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Caterpillar, and JP Morgan Chase. The Dow decliners, Salesforce, Microsoft, and IBM. The Dow down 84 points, the NASDAQ lower by 185, S&P 500 down 25. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
My name is Whitney Allen, and I'm a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought we'd ever have to use life insurance, but the unexpected happened. With Ethos, signing up was fast and 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage. I'm grateful we were prepared.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
Paid spokesperson. Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to selling your home in the North County, one agent can only do so much.
That's why we show up as a team.
I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Karen Peek.
And we're the Peek team.
And equal partners in every sale.
Pricing, marketing, negotiations.
We both do it all.
Two professionals reviewing every detail.
Two voices advocating for you at every step.
We tag team the work.
So nothing gets missed.
One mission.
Sell your home with minimized headaches.
We're the Peek team.
At Peek Realty.
And we work together for you.
Thinking about selling your home in North County? Reach the Peek team at Peek Realty. Just Google Peek Realty. That's P-E-E-K Realty. The Peek team at Peek Realty live wonderfully on the Central Coast.
DRE number 0219910.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Joel Peterson, a CEO of the Paso Robles Wine Country Alliance. You can call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Next week's show, I'm going to have Supervisor John Pichong on for the whole 90 minutes. And we're going to be talking about economic development with Melissa James from REACH. Again, I, as anybody who's listened to my conversations with John over the years, I think Joel, the biggest problem with SLO County is that too much money is spent on government and healthcare, that we need real private industry. And why I say, okay, yeah. On the one hand, there is impacts to business and people who buy property, and it's good, but it's important to be a good neighbor, as we talking about. Exactly. That's the whole thing. But we really need to do a better job in this county of getting private economic development going.
And that's what REACH is working on as well.
So they're trying to
get more private industry here just to bring in more jobs to diversify that. And that's great. I mean, at the end of the day, we want people here to make a good, healthy living and be able to spend their money in restaurants or, you know, wherever they're going to spend, on wineries, whatever they're going to do, you know?
Well, I mean, and it's so self-limiting. I mean, you know, we don't have affordable housing.
Right.
So the types of employees that wineries and restaurants and hotels want can't afford to live in this county anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, how are you guys engaged in that type of...
Yeah, we work with REACH a little bit as well. And certainly I helped sit on, you know, I sit on the CCEF, the Central Coast Economic Forecast Board, trying to figure out how to tackle some of these things. And I was there in REACH's initial meetings when they were getting started 5 or 6 years ago. And so it's important. I think we want to make sure that we're bringing the right people here, but also we're training our employees, or whether that's in our school districts. Are we doing CTE, you know, career technical education, so when kids are getting out of high school and or college, they can go right into the workforce and make a good living.
Right.
So we are working on it a little bit with REACH right now. We'll probably work on it more, and the county needs to work on that. I think you're exactly right. I mean, we're 3 hours, you know, 2.5 hours south of Silicon Valley right now. We're north of LA. We're a great hub. We've got, you know, the freeway here, the airport is as well, with Spaceport coming. So I think that there's some positive things coming our way. It's just a matter of, can we get the right partners lined up to make it happen?
Yeah. So where do you see our economy going here over the next 10 or 15 years? I mean, what if, for those of us who may not make it?
Yeah.
what do you see?
It's a good question. I mean, the nice thing is we had a nice steep incline from basically, you know, 2000 to about 3 years ago. It was pretty good incline in terms of wineries coming in and wine sales and consumption. And we certainly have seen a plateau right now. And that's probably not a bad thing in terms of people just kind of figuring out what they're drinking and how to stay healthy and things like that. But I think it's going to be an incline, but it's going to be a slow incline over the next probably 3 to 5 years. Paso is still a really exciting place. If you're picking up, you know, a wine magazine, or you're out there talking in the wine world, whether you're in New York or, and we were at Wine Paris a few months ago, like, people are excited about Paso Robles. It's kind of still undiscovered to a lot of people. So we've got a long runway ahead of us, but I think that you're going to see the family owned and operated wineries do well. They've got a really great story. They've got really good, you know, energy behind them in terms of, like, why do people come and spend 2 or 3 hours of their time with somebody and drink what they're making? Because they want to hear that story. They want to be part of that
club.
And that's where I think wineries really succeed, is you kind of become part of their little club or their little family. And you're like, oh, that's cool. I like the way they farm. I like their sensibilities of how they make their wine. I like how they run their business. And so then you kind of, you spend your dollars by saying, I'm going to join your club, or I'm going to come here 4 times a year and buy wines and be part of this experience. So I think that's the success, is like, be that authentic place that Paso Robles is. And I mean, to one of the speaker's points earlier, like, yeah, I mean, there's been tourism that has come and gone, whether it be the hot springs or the almonds or cattle, but this is really where we are now. Is next level. I mean, now it really is like a category of where people are spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars. So if we can continue to do that the right way, grow in a really smart manner, not overgrow, not get too big too fast, but really have it be grown in a really efficient, smart manner, I think we can really have a good long runway ahead of us. I'm excited about it.
Do you think some of the big guys who came in and bought up some of the wineries are having second thoughts about their decision?
Well, it's funny. I don't know if they're having second. I think they're having seconds of the success of what they're going to have. I think they're rethinking of what that success looks like.
Right.
And so I think that there's been brands that have come in, larger wineries have come in and said, hey, we're going to buy this brand and scale it, and it's going to hit, you know, 5X or 10X. It's probably not going to do that. It's probably going to grow a little bit. You know, after you're growing, there's always that 2 or 3 years of growing pains of, okay, we got to figure out, you know, the efficiencies of making the wine and who's making it and who's shipping it where and logistics. But I think that they're going to have success with those brands. It's just going to be a little bit slower success and over a longer period. It's the way I look at it. I mean, you look, you know, good example of, you know, you look at some brands that have been acquired, but they still have great name recognition. If you look at Dow, and Dow was, you know, built by George and Daniel and his team, and they've, you know, he's moved on, they've sold it to Treasury, but Treasury still has, you know, marketing power behind that to build a sales and marketing machine behind Dow. And they paid enough for it where they're not going to throw it away. They paid a beautiful amount of money for that brand, and they're going to grow it.
Yeah.
And whether you're in Europe or New York or Miami, I mean, that brand is everywhere. So that's an investment for them, and an investment in Paso Robles to make sure people are going to come back here and spend some money here as well. So,
well, I was just at Costco yesterday, and I saw, what is it? Pessimist by Dow.
Yeah, Pessimist.
And I mean, they're selling it for like $13.99 a bottle. How do they make money?
Well, I think that's a volume thing. Probably they're making enough of it, and there's probably
there might be some deals
on that as well. I think that typically is a brand that was closer to $18 or $19 when it was first came out. But
yeah,
Costco. drives a hard bargain too. So
well, and again, I mean, that's one way you're going to get the younger people into the market. So Joel, thank you so much for coming in,
and
we'll bring you back again to talk after the festival.
You got your
work cut out for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Folks, we'll be back next week with Melissa James from Reach and John Pichong, District 1 County Supervisor. Thanks for putting up with some of our technical stuff today. We'll be back.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.